Further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Today's chaplain is our own Senator Gary Kubley.
Shall we pray? Creator God, your spirit indwells your created, that is, your children gathered here. Can you help us to regard one another with the same love and respect that you regard each one of us? We admit to being less than you have created us to be. We are fraught with false ambitions, breaches of integrity, a lack of ethics, our societal injustices. Seems there's something for everyone to feel guilty about. But into the darkest of places of our being, Lord, you bring a light that leads us once again to you. Such is the nature of your marvelous love, O God. There's nothing we can do to make you turn your back on us, even though we're pretty consistent in turning ours on you. Even here in this place, when we run into disagreement with those who oppose us, we want you to punish the sins of those we see as our political enemies, all the while believing that in all fairness our own sin ought to be overlooked. Sometimes, Lord, our past is painful enough that the only place we have not exhausted in our search for relief is your love and mercy. You're the one who can keep us going when every step seems difficult. You're the one who can bring light into the darkness of our own regret. You are the author of forgiveness that seeks to heal us, not to punish us, and to correct our thinking, not to make us suffer. So lead us on, Lord, until we can see each person as your creation, worthy of our love and respect, a member of the same human family which shares you as a common spiritual parent. In your strong name, amen.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebretson, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. First, order of business is executive and official communications. The communications is printed on today's agenda. Next order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House File 2788, that's on your agenda, and not on your agenda, House File 3201, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
House bills. Next order of business, first reading of House bills. There's one to be read.
House File 3201, a bill for an act relating to financing and operation of government in this state, making policy technical, administrative, payment, enforcement, collection, proceeds, distribution, refund, and other changes to income, etc.
Referred to tax. Without objection, will be referred to the Taxes Committee. There's one printed on today's agenda. That'll be referred to the State and Local Committee. Next order of business is reports of committees. One to be read at the desk.
Senator Marty from the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security, to which is referred Senate File 3099, a bill for an act relating to public health, increasing affordability and continuity of care for state health care programs, reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended as follows. And when so amended, the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda and the one read by the secretary be adopted with the exception of the report pertaining to appointments.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
And he'll see up to-
Mr. President.
You want to, Senator Pogemiller.
I move that the committee report pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is second reading of Senate bills. There are four printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is second reading of House bills. There is one printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are five authors' motions. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Solon, did you have a motion to make? Senator Solon, do you wish to withdraw this bill, Senate File 2372, from the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection and re-refer it to the Committee on Health and Housing and Family Security? Is that your motion?
Mr. Chair, that is or Mr. President, that is correct. I'm just trying to look it up to see which bill that is and why I'm doing that at this moment.
It's related to insurance. Have you talked to the chairs of the respective committees?
Oh, you know, Mr. President, I do know what it is. It's just they're not able to hear it at this time, and the Health Committee can hear it first. And so in order to meet the deadlines, we need to move the bill to the Health Committee.
All right. Any discussion on Senator Solon, Petner Solon's motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Are we going to
remain on motions?
Remaining on motions, Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, do you want to take introductions first and then we'll do the special order?
That's fine. We'll proceed to introduction.
I'll proceed to introduction of Senate bills. Without objection, first reading and introduction of Senate bills.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate Senate File Number 3295 a special order for immediate consideration. That's the bonding bill. And I mentioned to members, I mentioned to Senator Senjum that I misspoke yesterday. I thought we were going to take it on general orders, but might as well just take it on special orders.
Okay. So.
Senator Langseth. Yep.
Senator Langseth. We have to adopt his motion first. You just designated the special orders, no motion. Senator Langseth, on the discussion on the bonding bill.
Let's see, is it Mr. President or Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, right?
President.
Okay. Mr. President, members of the Senate, about 40% of you are on my committee, and a number that aren't are on the Finance Committee, so you've heard the details, but I think you've all looked at the spreadsheets. As you probably know, there was about $3.5 billion worth of requests. So if there's some things in your district that didn't get in here, you've got a lot of company, because it was $2.5 billion worth of requests that we weren't able to do. I certainly do want to thank my administrative assistant, Kathy. Those of you who went on many of the trips were somewhat in awe of the fact that we were on schedule all the time, and she does a great job. And it is really great to get around the whole state of Minnesota, even apart from the bonding, and see everything that is going on within this state. As far as the bill is concerned, if you look at the spreadsheet, that first page, we obviously never do 100% of the request, but about one-third of the bill is normally higher education, and we're in that area now, like maybe as much as 35%. And I think I'll just basically turn it over to the body and let you ask any questions you wish or clarifications on any of the other requests. So I guess that's sort of it. But if you have any questions about any of the other projects on any of the other pages, feel free to ask.
Any discussion on the Omnibus Capital Investment Bill, Senate File 3295, Senator Langseth?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to call the Senate.
Senate's under call. Senator Langseth.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings on the call be dispensed with and the sergeant be instructed to bring in the absentees.
On the Langseth motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Now discussion on the bill. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to ask Senator Langseth about the general fund dollars in the bill and perhaps how we are going to address those issues. I realize that some of them are very important to operation expenditures for programs that we're putting in place, but I am just concerned about the amount of the general fund dollars and the deficit that we're facing and how we're going to have to fund those.
Mr. President, members, there's about $25 million that this bill will cost in general fund. Only about $5 million of that is for debt service on the bill, because about two-thirds of this bill is factored, the debt service is factored into this biennium's expenditures. There are a few projects that absolutely have to have cash money. We funded a few years ago the Lewis and Clark project, the water project, that they say can't be bonded, so we canceled those bonds and came up with cash. That urban partnership agreement where we're matching $130 million from the federal government with a total of about $50 million is in here, and of course that's very, very important. And there's the flood control project at Browns Valley, and you remember the bad flood they had there. That has to be cash simply because the diversion channel is on the South Dakota side of the river. And then there's a few other minor things in here, but I think this is relatively small as compared to other bonding bills as far as the cash.
Further discussion on Senate File 3295.
Mr. President, there is an amendment that's supposed to be offered here that's necessary for the bill.
Mr. President?
Yeah, do we have a name on that?
Cohen. I have the A-17 amendment, but Senator Cohen isn't here, so I'm going to offer it.
Okay, we're discussion on the Cohn-Pappas A-17 amendment. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr.
President. Excuse me, let's report the amendment first.
Senator Pappas moves to amend Senate File 3295 as follows, page 10, line 29. This is Amendment A-17.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. This amendment addresses some concerns that occurred within the St. Paul delegation. And in Finance Committee yesterday, we had an important debate about St. Paul's priority of debt relief on its River Center Convention Facility. And the St. Paul delegation is committed to resolving the great fiscal challenges that are facing our city, including the escalating debt on the River Center. And we know that Senator Langseth is sympathetic and willing to help us find a solution, but the solution we came up with yesterday is not workable. So we've decided to withdraw our placeholder in this bonding bill, and we're going to pursue other directions. The amendment restores full funding to St. Paul projects that's originally passed by the Capital Investment Committee. And again, we're grateful for Senator Langseth's support.
Further discussion on the A-17 amendment, Senator Cohn.
Mr. President, obviously I would join Senator Pappas in asking members to support this amendment. I do want to disagree with Senator Pappas for just a second, and that is when she suggested the amendment was not workable. The amendment was workable. I recognize that many members of the Senate have concerns about the amendment and have concerns about what St. Paul is attempting to do. I'm not going to deliver a long speech, but St. Paul has some unique problems. We certainly think relative to the River Center that we have provided state financing for any number of convention centers and event centers, beginning with the $80 million this body appropriated for the Minneapolis Convention Center 10 years ago. And St. Paul, as a city that has some unique problems, given our geographic smallness within Ramsey County, given some of the economic problems St. Paul has, that we have found that we were maybe ahead of the curve. It's possible what St. Paul should have done is it should have waited several years and joined the list of other cities around the state seeking such support. We recognize that there are concerns on the part of members of the Senate relative to financing of debt, and so we are asking, we're presenting this amendment to backtrack from where we were, but the St. Paul problems will not go away and will be exacerbated as the years proceed.
Further discussion on it, Senator Langseth. Senator Langseth, I think I was talking when you made your remarks. Did you want to say what you said again to the body? You agree with the Senator Langseth?
Yes, I said agree.
Okay,
with
yeah, I'm sorry. I was talking when you were talking. So, Senator Langseth supports the amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 3295 as amended. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A-21 amendment.
Secretary will report the Wergen A-21 amendment.
Senator Wergen moves to amend Senate File 3295 as follows, page 62, line 12. This is Amendment A-21.
Senator Wergen, on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. I have a concern about this bill, and I think this amendment answers that concern. I'm concerned with the actual size of the bill when we're facing a deficit, and I'm concerned that we stay with the very strong Minnesota position of not using more than 3% of our general fund to pay back bonds. And so when we're heading into a time like this where we have a deficit and we could be facing a potential recession, we need to be very careful with what we do. And so, members, I want to draw your attention to page 62 of the bill, starting on line 5. There is some language on page 62, beginning on line 5, that does restrict the sale of bonds so that we do not exceed that 3% overall limit within our general fund. That is very important language. But I think it's also important to take that language just one step further by adding the A21 amendment, which not only then says are we limited to 3% in the current biennia, in future biennias we are limited to that amount as well, so that we don't run into trouble later on with what we're doing in this bill and with bonds being let. So instead of just restricting the 3% to the biennia, it says into the future we will maintain less than that 3%. So the departments cannot issue bonds if the payments are going to exceed 3% of our revenue, of our general, of our budget. So that's the essence of this, and I think it makes the bill stronger. It makes sure that we stay in a strong financial position. And for those of you that went to the forecast briefing, I hope you heard very strongly that our state economist, Mr. Stenson, indicated that going over this 3% puts our bond rating in jeopardy. We do not want our bond rating in jeopardy. And if this is one small thing that we can do to ensure that our bond rating will remain very strong now and into the future, then I think that we should put this amendment into the bill so that we don't run into trouble in the future. Thank you.
On the amendment, Senator Langseth.
Mr. President, members, let's keep in mind that the 3% isn't in law, it isn't in rules. It was something that was started way, way back, but we've adhered to it, and I have always supported it. Some of the disagreement now is what size bill we can have to get to that 3%. And basically, I think even without this amendment, the bonds would never be issued to go beyond the 3%. But I have no problem at all with this language. And for those of you who want a little reassurance in the bill, this is fine. I support the amendment.
Further discussion on Senator Wergen's amendment? Seeing none, all. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 3295 as amended. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Langseth yield for a question?
He will yield. Senator Langseth will yield. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Langseth, no one works harder than you and your staff. Nobody puts in more time and more miles and has more hearings. But since your committee, since we did all that work, two major things have happened here at the Capitol. We passed a large transportation bill, and we had bad news in the form of the state budget forecast. So I want to inquire a little more about your thinking about blowing through that 3% guideline. If we followed the 3%, Mr. President, we'd have a bonding bill that was a little smaller than what we have before us today. We'd have about an $820, $830 million bonding bill. So in light of a recession and in light of a state budget deficit, it seems like it would be prudent for us to put this bill on a diet. We should not be making promises we can't keep. We're going to be battling that for the next 2 months here at the Capitol. So what was your rationale, Senator Langseth?
Mr. President, Senator, the rationale is that this bill will not get us beyond the 3%, but there is this assurance that if it actually did, that the bonds would not be sold above that. But, you know, the best time to build is during a recession. We have many contractors now that are very hungry. They will be coming in with bids considerably smaller than they would be if the economy was booming. This is simply the time to build. There are people out there that are unemployed in the construction trades. I had a conversation with a contractor one time, and he said during down times, he said the contractors are usually bidding in a way they don't even make a profit. They simply want to keep their crews together for the time that things get better. and the bids just come in far, far better. And it helps to turn around the economy to have these people working. So it is the best time to be selling these bonds and constructing these projects. Doing it during booming times means that the price is going to be considerably higher.
Senator Michelle, I might remind the members that I didn't find a rule here, but you face the podium when you're talking and not who you're talking to. And until we change that rule.
I apologize, Mr. President. I'm trying to pivot a little more.
You're not doing a very good job of it. Senator Michelle.
Well, Mr. President, I am very concerned about the credit rating. Now, we're not going to have busloads of accountants and auditors coming up to the Capitol saying, save our credit rating. It's not that interesting or sexy of an issue, Mr. President, but it is important. And it's not just important for us today. It's important for the next generation. If our credit rating goes south, it's going to cost the state more money to do what it wants to do. So putting the 3% debt limit in jeopardy hurts those we want to turn the state over to. It hurts the next generation. Every dollar that is in this bill, the state is going to stand behind with its full faith and credit. It's an obligation. Now, the chairman of the bonding committee has pointed out that historically we haven't always appropriated all that funding. We haven't let all those bonds. But we have to stand behind every dollar in this bill today. So, Mr. President, I fear we are making promises we can't keep. I think all of those across Minnesota who are interested in this bonding bill, who are following this debate, should know that this bill is going to get smaller. I don't think it's going to get smaller today in the Minnesota Senate, but it's going to need to get smaller as we go through this process with the other body, as we go through the process with the governor. And that would be the responsible thing to do. We need to find about 10% in this bill. And that's not fun. I know that. We'd rather have a much bigger bonding bill. But the rest of this session is going to be about setting priorities and saying no. And why don't we start that today?
Mr. President.
Senator Langsworth.
As I've explained, we are not going to go beyond the 3%. The bonds simply are not going to be issued beyond the 3%. But I have heard some of the comments made by bond companies. They aren't as concerned about how much is in the bonding bill, although they do like that discipline of the 3%. What's going on with the Minnesota budget has more to do with the bond rating than the amount in the bonding bill. So if we rebalance the budget this year, that is going to have far more to do with our credit rating. And there's something that I read that they even take into account political gridlock. If there's political gridlock in the state where they have a very difficult time rebalancing budgets and so on, that is a bigger factor than the size of the bonding bill. But they do like the 3% dividend. It doesn't have to be 3%. They just like the fact that we only go so high.
Senator Murphy, do you have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I have the A18 amendment.
Secretary will report Senator Murphy's A18 amendment.
Senator Murphy moves to amend Senate File 3295 as follows, page 41, line 22. This is amendment A18.
Senator Murphy, discussion on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that rule you were looking for is 36.8. And actually, it says that they have to address the president. I know in years past our rules have said, you know, you can't wander around while you're talking and turn and, you know, acknowledge the author of the bill and things like that. But the remarks have to be made to the president. So I'll keep mine to you, sir. Good. Mr. Thank President, the A18 amendment is pretty simple to understand. It starts on page 41, and this is the portion of the bill that deals with the urban partnership agreement. this $4 million that is in the bill here on line 26 of page 41 is actually carried in the transportation bill. This would double book that money, and Senator Michelle, we're doing the best we can to pare back, and so I'm taking $4 million out of the bill right here, and I think that this has been okayed with Senator Langseth, and I would ask for the support of the body.
Senator Langseth.
Mr. President, I do support the amendment. That $4 million was in the transportation bill, which is now in law, so it doesn't need to be in this bill.
On Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, appreciate Senator Murphy's willingness to offer this amendment. Let me just make a variation of the speech I gave to the Finance Committee yesterday. There's no free money. This bill does have some general fund appropriations. Obviously, we need an appropriation for the additional debt service. We have some appropriations, as Senator Langseth has been very careful about, relative to general fund dollars. For instance, there's an appropriation here where it's contiguous to the state of South Dakota. So obviously, we can't bond in the state of South Dakota. We have to do it through cash. But everything we do this year is going to add that much more to the difficulty in facing the deficit. So obviously, this amendment is one where this particular appropriation tracks in two places, and appreciate Senator Murphy's catching it and willingness to offer the amendment so that we can make that much further of a dent in the deficit. And obviously, hope people will join Senator Langseth and Senator Murphy in supporting the amendment.
Question is on Senator Murphy's amendment. Discussion, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 3295 as amended. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 3295, a bill for an act relating to capital improvements, authorizing spending to acquire and better public land and buildings and other improvements of a capital nature with certain conditions, etc.
Mr. President, I believe I have to ask for a roll call vote, don't I, on this at this time?
Yeah, it's money, so I think it's automatic.
Okay.
Third reading of the bill. Secretary will take the roll on the bill. Senate's under call. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 51 ayes, 7 nays. The bill is passed and it's said agreed to. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, on motions, I would move the Senate to now resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole. Oops, oh wait.
You lay it on the table, I believe.
I move that Senate File 3295 be laid on the table.
As amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Then members, why don't we take up these four bills that were on general orders yesterday that we didn't get to. And so I would move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the Pogermiller motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
And Mr. Chairman, the list is coming out, but it's number 12 on general orders, number 13 on general orders, number 9 on general orders, and number 10 on general orders. The list will be out in a second. And I yield to Senator Scheid.
Senator, first bill to be discussed on general orders, number 12 on general orders, Senate File 3154, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3154 be recommended to pass.
Senator Scheid, discussion on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the first of two bills I have before you today that are amending or attempting to amend the anti-predatory lending legislation that we enacted last year. Now, we're going to continue to have the most stringent prohibitions on predatory lending practices in the nation. This bill adds language that is more specific about the factors that can be considered when they're making a non-traditional loan. Members may have heard of no doc or no documented or undocumented loans. Those originally began as were very appropriately used historically where tax returns or pay stubs wouldn't allow a good to excellent risk borrower to get a mortgage. And lenders were able to use this format to make those loans. Well, we closed that loophole, if you will, in our legislation last year, but we did allow, and for the language to be similarly reliable documentation as similarly reliable to things like tax returns and pay stubs. This adds some specific factors that may be used by lenders. What we learned was that certain of our lenders, our Minnesota companies, were not able to sell or resell their loans in the marketplace, so they were unable to make loans, and the loans then, these good loans, were then going to the banks who were federally chartered. They were able to make those loans. The language, and I'm looking for, here we go, what and you can, I don't know if this summary on the Senate floor explains it, but current and expected income can be used, and you might wonder about something like expected income when I think there are over 1,000 residents come to the Mayo Clinic every year for employment. It will be their first paying job. They have a contract, but they don't have a pay stub and they don't have a tax return because they've been paying to go to medical school. Now they're resident. Now they can show their contract to the lender, and that would enable the lender to make a loan to them. They'd be a very good risk, people just out of medical school. So these are the kinds of things, the kinds of situations that we want to be able to allow lenders to do. Current and expected cash flow, net worth, other financial resources other than the equity that secure in the dwelling that secures a loan. Current financial obligations, property taxes and insurance, employment status, credit history, debt to income ratio, credit scores, tax returns, pension statements, and employment payment records. That is That's really what the bill does. It's going to let our regulated mortgage bankers make loans that I think we unintentionally cut off last year. Even though we have the language reliably similar, there hasn't been enough for them to be able to overcome in the secondary market. So other limitations on the mortgage lending apply. You have to show a borrower's ability to repay the loan, et cetera. We're not tinkering with that. I do want to offer an amendment. Senator Olson raised a concern in the Commerce Committee. Why don't I just offer the A1 amendment, and maybe that will provide some comfort.
Secretary will report the Scheid A1 amendment.
Senator Scheid moves to amend Senate File 3154 as follows, page 4, line 35. This is amendment A-1.
Senator Scheid, on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The concern raised by Senator Olson in the committee was that a lender then might be able to just use one of those factors. And we're saying, first of all, that doesn't work that way in the traditional and very legitimate marketplace where people are selling packages of loans. They were not able to do that with the criteria we had kind of narrowly described, even though it was the intent of that legislation last year to allow other factors. We really needed to be more prescriptive. But this says you cannot simply rely on just one of those factors. So this would, that's what this does. It assures, I think it's some comfort language, because that's how it would work in the real world in any case. I'd appreciate your support.
Discussion
on the amendment.
Discussion on the Scheid amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, then, I think I've described the bill with that amendment. It's going to enable some of our good Minnesota mortgage bankers to continue to re-begin anew making the kinds of loans that are really among the best kinds of loans, just that they can't be traditionally supported with tax returns and pay stubs. So with that, I just ask for members' support.
Is there discussion on Senate File 3154? Seeing none, Senator Scheid renews her motion with this committee to arise that Senate File 3154 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The next item on general orders is number 13, Senate File 2881, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2881 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the second bill that amends last year's anti-predatory lending legislation. This bill updates, if you will, our usury law as it pertains to contracts for deed, not to other kinds of loans, just contracts for deed. It raises the usury limit to a contract for deed up to $300,000 of contract for deed loan, if you will. Current law, it applies only to the first $100,000. Obviously, this recognizes the increase in home values that we've experienced. So that's a consumer protection of the bill. And then the bill also corrects an unintended consequence of last year's legislation and allows for FHA and VA refinancing. We never intended to cut those out. And, Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment, the A-7.
The Secretary will report the A-7 amendment.
Senator Scheid moves to amend Senate File 2881 as follows, page 10, line 12. This is amendment A-7.
On the amendment, Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The A-7 amendment has to do just with the effective date. And what we're doing is saying that the usury provision on contracts for deed would not take effect until January 1st, 2009. So we don't interfere in the marketplace until that. It doesn't change things for people until then. Give them time to prepare for that. So it's just the sections that deal with the usury limit on contracts for deed.
Is there discussion on the A7 amendment? Hearing none, the question occurs on the A7 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. The A7 amendment is adopted. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, again, this is a small bill, but it does correct some oversights from last year's legislation. I'll appreciate the body's support.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2881? Seeing none, Senator Scheid renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2881 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The next item on general orders is number 9, Senate File 2908. Senator Higgins.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2908 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill dealing with notice requirements to tenants during the mostly during the redemption period. Section 1 amends the statute that imposes restrictions on the terms of residential leases. The new language would say that when the landlord has received notice of a cancellation of contract for deed or the sale of the mortgage foreclosure sale, the landlord may enter into lease agreements with a term of not more than 2 months or whatever time is left until the redemption period expires, whichever is less. And it also states that before entering into the lease and accepting any rent or damage deposits or security deposits, the landlord has to notify the tenant that he or she has received notice of the foreclosure sale and when the redemption period would expire. Subdivision 2 then provides for an exception to Subdivision 1 for certain longer-term leases. And it would not apply if the holder of the mortgage or the mortgagee agrees not to terminate the lease other than for lease violations for at least a year from the beginning of the tenancy. And the lease then would not require the tenant to prepay rent for any month after the redemption period. Subdivision 3... is a provision that would come into play when there is a new owner and the tenant stays in the property and it deals with the transfer of the tenancy. And it says that the tenant would be bound to the new landlord for 1 year or the balance of the lease term, whichever is less. Subdivision 4 then is some protection for the new owner, saying that he or she is not bound by agreements made by the previous landlord, such as acts or omissions, modifications of leases, and things like that. Section 2 then would allow the tenant to not pay the last month's rent and use that damage deposit that was probably given when the property was first rented. It's likely that they would not receive their damage deposit back, so this is a provision that would allow them to just expend that. And Section 3, the last section, says that if a person... it amends the grounds for eviction to clarify that in cases involving foreclosure, the grounds for eviction exist after the expiration of the redemption period. And if a person entered into a lease after the date of the foreclosure or contract for deed cancellation and before the end of the redemption period, that tenant then would receive a 2 months' rent, a 2 months' notice for having to leave the property. Current law is 1 month. That's what it is. Thank you for your support.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2908? Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion by Senator Higgins, and when this committee do arise, Senate File 2908 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The next item on general orders is Senate File 2909, Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 2909 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 2909 has to do with tenants, and it's divided into two type of buildings. Buildings that have more than five tenants in it and those that have four or less. And for the larger portion, if you live in an apartment building and the landlord is not paying the utilities, the tenants can get together and raise enough money to pay the utilities for at least 1 month. And then they don't have to pay what's in the arrears, but just the current bill, and the utility will give them 1 month of additional service. And then, but that's it. But for if you're in a building that's under five units, so four units or less, one of the tenants can become the tenant of record, and they can pay the utility bill. And what would happen then is that this could be an ongoing process, and they would deduct the utility payment from their rent. And then when the landlord, if this happens, where he would finally come and pick up the back payment, then the landlord could become the customer record again. So it's really a way for to help tenants in apartment buildings stay in their building if something happens with the landlord's financial situations and he falls behind on his bills. So I would urge your support. Stand for any questions.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2909? Senator Worgen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olsen, I'm not real clear. Is this a case where the landlord perhaps is entering into a bankruptcy or there are financial difficulties for the landlord? And in this case, if it's the tenants begin to pay the utility bills, does it prolong a bad situation so the tenants end up staying, but the foreclosure company, because the owner is bankrupt? In other words, does it become harder to evict in a situation where the building may not have all of the safety measures or anything in place because there's a foreclosure on the building, but the tenants are staying and paying some bills independently?
Chair, Senator Worgen, sorry. On the part of the bill that addresses larger facilities, because it's only 1 month, they do have other processes to go through. If it is a foreclosure, it would probably be in court, and an administrator would be assigned to oversee, you know, what's happening to the building. But on a smaller building, the four units are under. I believe I can't answer your question directly. It's designed for, you know, primarily in the winter months, so somebody's not thrown out in the cold. But I do not know how long it would continue. So if they're not paying their bill, you know, and the residents are paying the bill, at least that part of it's being taken care of.
Senator Worgen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olsen, I'll look at it more closely before it comes up for final passage, obviously. But this might be a situation that interferes with the foreclosure. Now, I don't want people kicked out any more than they have to be. I mean, they may well have been paying their rent and paying everything in a timely manner, and they are inadvertently the victims of a foreclosure. So I'll take a look at it and I'll work with you. But Senator Olsen, if you have the opportunity to find out a few of those answers about how this might interfere with a foreclosure, would you please let me know?
Is there further discussion? Senator Loomer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I have, Senator Olsen, is And I first might want to add that I like your bill. I think it's going in the right direction. But there's a technical issue that I did have, and I understand that your bill would provide a right for a tenant to become responsible to pay for a utility bill in the event that a landlord could not. And if it happened to be a four-unit building, one tenant is allowed to be that individual to pay, make that payment, to be the designated customer of record. And that could only be used once every 12 months for that particular building. The question that I have is what happens after 8 months? Let's say that tenant's lease expires. Then what happens? Who becomes the utility customer of record after that 8 months? And you've already limited it in law a tenant once every 12 months per building. So what happens after that? I need to know that.
Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, no, that's a fair question, and Ron Elwood and I have had discussions on that, and my understanding was for that be put in place, the one person is that, so they don't keep rolling it over to different tenants, that, you know, one person would take that responsibility and be, you know, pay the bill and, you know, then get also get their credit off their rent, too. But in reality, I don't see this as an ongoing process. I mean, if the landlord is not paying these bills for up to 8 months, I suspect there's a lot more other things going on. So I would think I can find an answer for you, but I don't think that in the real world that would probably happen. Although you're in this business, you may know more than I do on it.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Olsen, I'm a little concerned about some of the other things that we're recognizing today as far as protecting tenants in buildings that may be foreclosed. And we are recognizing the power of the lease as holding that individual there to the best use of the building so that people aren't displaced. And so I hope that we've coordinated this action that you have with these bills with the extended stay that we're recognizing in state law to keep tenants in some of these buildings. So I'm going to trust you on that you've done your due diligence, coordinated the actions between the other foreclosure laws that we're now modifying in order to recognize tenant rights. But that could extend that stay in some buildings. And I hope, I just think that maybe one tenant per building, and if they happen to leave after 8 months, there may not be any designated customer in that building now as a result of putting this into law. So I'm just hoping that we've covered all of that in coordination with some of the other things that we're modifying in foreclosure law on non-owner-occupied buildings.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, I think in actuality what would work is, or what would happen practically, is that the bill would then go back in the name of the owner. And then 4 months would expire, and, you know, then there might be the possibility of another new tenant coming in. But what would have happened in that period of time is that the bill would be current, and so the owner then would only have to do like the tenant does and have to look forward to a month at a time bill rather than the amount that's often in arrears. Current law states that the tenant would, tenants can already do this, but they have to pay back, they have to pay the outstanding amount that is due on that water bill, for instance, which in some cases could be thousands of dollars. The big change in here is that they can go forward, and then the outstanding bill gets assessed on taxes when the time comes. So I think this is a good change. It certainly would be a good tenant, a protection for the tenants, and I know that the utilities do this on a regular basis, have a tenant's name. They don't lose the owner's name in the process of that, but they do have the tenant who becomes the bill payer of record. So it should work.
Sarah Wolfine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Limmer, there has been a working group, the renters working group has been working with the utility, so they have been putting that effort forward. And also, when choosing the, because this is a voluntary program, I think the people are saying, you know, we like living here instead of being forced to move. I would suspect they would pick the person to maybe make the payment, hopefully be somebody that might have a longer lease, so they're not going to run out of the lease maybe after 8 months or something. But I will get a more definitive answer, and I appreciate that you trust me on this.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 2909? For discussion. Hearing none, Senator Olsen renews his motion that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 2909 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Members, we do have a second list. I don't know if it's been distributed. The first item is Senator Sharon, Senate File 2471. It's number one on general order. Senator Sharon.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair, when this committee do arise, I move that the committee support Senate File 2471.
On that motion, Senator Sharon.
Members of the Senate, this is legislation that will change the age from 17 to 16, allowing 16-year-olds in the state of Minnesota to donate blood with the consent of their parents or a guardian. It also is very clear that they can participate in any voluntary but non-compensatory blood program, and they can do this with consent of their parents. This legislation is a safe and prudent step to increasing the amount of blood products that are available to blood centers and emergency management organizations in Minnesota. Many of these organizations are facing periodic shortages and are often seeking ways to expand their donor base. This bill will help to ensure that they are able to meet the demand for life-saving blood products. As a matter of fact, every 2 seconds, someone is needing blood in our country. Senator Sharon's bill, this bill has been inspired by Joe Gibson. Joe Gibson is a 16-year-old high school student from Blooming Prairie. He brought this bill donation to us and asked for a change in the bill after he was not able to donate blood for his grandfather who had leukemia. Subsequently, he started to work on this blood donation bill. He was able to recognize two things. First, he was prohibited from doing something that he really wanted to do for his grandfather, and he also learned in the process that he could be very effective in impacting public policy if he became involved and started a piece of legislation that would benefit blood donations. So this bill will move the legal age down for donation to the age of 16 as long as the teen has written permission from their parent or guardian and does not receive any compensation for it. So it's wonderful to see a young person engage themselves in the political process. I think that that's an additional benefit. Not only will there be extra people able to do blood donations, but we're seeing young people be engaged in the political process. There are letters on your desk from the American Red Cross, the Memorial Blood Centers of Minnesota, and the Mayo Clinic Blood Donor Centers in support of this bill. And there are several states that you might be interested to know, including California, Georgia, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Maine, Maryland, Missouri, Nebraska, New York, Oregon, Washington, and Puerto Rico that already are allowing 16-year-olds to donate blood. And the Wisconsin legislature, by the way, has just passed a similar bill, which is on its way to be signed by the governor. I request your support. Thank you.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2471? Discussion. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sharon Yield.
She will yield.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, is there an argument that could be made that we put the age at 15?
Senator Sharon.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. The original bill included 15-year-olds, but the but because there are some additional possibilities for reactions to the process in 15-year-olds, that particular language was removed from the bill. So there could be arguments made for including 15-year-olds in this bill, but the blood centers were a little more concerned about their capacity to deal with the risks at that age, so we've agreed to remove that from the bill.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 2471? Seeing none, Senator Sharon renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2471 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Rest. The next item is number 2 on general orders, Senate File 2511. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 2511 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 2511 reinstates two advisory groups that were inadvertently repealed in the last session when we were trying to rid the statutes of working groups and advisory groups that were no longer operative.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2511? Seeing none, Senator Rest renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2511 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. The next item is number 4 on general order, Senate File 2377, Senator Laurie. Senator Laurie. Number 3 on
boy.
Number 4 on general order, Senate File 2377.
Mr.
Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2377 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can tell my colleague Senator Coring is with me on this. This is a bill for our rural EMS folks. If you talk to them, recruitment and retention is one of their biggest issues, and they're having a really hard time getting all of the volunteers and trained staff that they need. This is a pretty modest bill that, after working it over for a while, got the support of the EMS Regional Board and has really engendered no opposition when we heard it in the Policy Committee. What it essentially does is, in an effort to expand the eligible pool of personnel and decrease red tape, basic life support ambulance services would be able to staff a first responder and an EMT without a waiver on ambulance calls after the initial call. Current rules require that two EMTs go out on every call, and they just are not able to maintain proper staffing ratios to do that over and over again. And so this will help them. I should note that the first responder does have a good deal of training regarding operation of the equipment, and the first responder would be restricted to driving the unit while the EMT with the training to provide the service for the person in the back will be in the back with the person. And again, it affects only the subsequent calls. For advanced life support crews on subsequent calls after the first call, it also allows for a first responder driver, again with the paramedic in the back, the higher trained individual, so that we're keeping a close eye for the EMSRB, the regulatory board, to make sure that we're ensuring patient safety, but allowing a little bit more flexibility with staffing for the driver of the EMT rigs, particularly in rural Minnesota that has such a problem with recruitment and retention. So I would ask for your support in this measure and would stand for any questions.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2377? Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, no particular questions. And I don't know a lot about this bill, but I think what we all know about is the great service that our ambulance folks across Minnesota provide for us every day of the year, every hour of the day. And so to the extent that this will help them and make life a little easier and more flexible, I think we ought to support this. And at the same time, thank you to a great service.
So further discussion? So further discussion on Senate File 2377. Senator Workin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Laurie, I just want to echo a thank you for introducing this bill and for helping our rural ambulance providers make sure that they're adequately staffed
and not struggling to find people and calling people from family events to come in. I do know that some of these folks take very long shifts and they volunteer their time, and so we appreciate any way that we can make it easier. And even more importantly, this may very well help to retain those folks that come and help with the ambulance services. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 2377? Seeing none, Senator Laurie renews his motion that this committee do arise at Senate File 2377 be recommended pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The next item is number 5 on general orders, Senate File 2796. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee does arise, Senate File 2796 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 2796 fixes an unintended consequence from last year relating to early childhood family education licensure. As a result of the new law, the Minnesota Board of Teaching can issue special permissions to allow individuals who do not hold an early childhood or a parent and family education license to teach in an ECFE setting in Minnesota. Prior to learning about the changes in legislation, permissions were issued for the 2007-2008 school year. Rescinding these permissions could create hardships for ECFE programs, and some programs might be forced to be canceled. This language will allow for a school board to request a variance for ECFE licensing. This is an important issue in rural Minnesota in particular, where finding licensed teachers to provide services can be challenging. This is a change which will allow a person who may not be licensed but is qualified to provide early childhood education to be licensed. I appreciate member support. We'll stand for questions.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2796? Seeing none, Senator Saxhog removes it. Oh, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, would like to stand in support of this very important bill. And thank you, Senator Saxhog, for getting this issue some substance, because I tried to work on it a couple years ago and ran into some obstacles, and it's truly a very difficult issue out in greater Minnesota in these small communities that value their children and want to have an early childhood family education program but aren't able to get all the credentials for these teachers. The numbers just aren't there when it comes to it. So this allows our communities to still have and promote an early childhood education program, and I'm in full support of it. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 2796? Seeing none, Senator Saxhog renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2796 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. The last item on this list is number 7 on general orders, Senate File 2418. Senator Coring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would so move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File number 2418 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Coring.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Pretty simple bill. This is another bill that the Ambulance Association has asked me to carry. The Ambulance Association has a Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board. One of the rules that was put in place is that no member could serve over one term, which is 4 years. And as I think we all know, you're here 4 years, you just start to try to get a feel for how this place works. And so they wanted to be able to have members serve 2 consecutive terms. And then when I had this in committee, Senator Laurie says, well, why don't we just get rid of having a term limit on it at all? So the committee was in full favor of that. So that was the change on line page 2, line 16. And then the Ambulance Association has been ordered to do trauma triage transportation and have trauma triage and transport guidelines by July 1st, 2009. They're not going to quite be ready by that date, and so we just pushed it back one more year down to 2010. So pretty straightforward. I also want to thank Buck McKelkin, who's the president of the Ambulance Association, and O.J. Doyle, who continue to do a great job. And Senator Sinjum was right. You know, when we pick up that phone and dial 911, we expect those folks to be there in an instant and help us out when we're in a time of need. So I would ask the members' support on this bill.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2418? Seeing none, Senator Corrigan renews his motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 2418 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee do now arise and report.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move this report of the Committee of the Whole as kept by the Secretary be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, is there any other work at the desk? Mr. President, then I would hold then for announcements.
Without objection, the following members will be excused from today's session. Senators Vickerman, Moi, Gerlach, Han, Jungbauer, Ortman, Chaudhry, and Bach all day, and Senator Torres Ray from 11 to 11:50 a.m. Are there other announcements of Senate interest? Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I would then move that the Senate do adjourn till Wednesday, March 5th, 11 a.m.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.